time to cross to the United States. Our correspondent Ron Elving is senior editor and correspondent Washington Desk for NPR News. Hi, Ron. How you doing?
Good to be with you, Lynn.
Well, busy times over there. I mean, we know the Delta variant of the coronavirus spreads like crazy, but I think more worrying information about the Delta surge from research in the US.
There is a good deal of new data coming in. We're learning a great deal more about this variant. And it is mostly discouraging because it is, as you say, so much more contagious. And it is also discouraging that people who have been vaccinated and are at very little risk of the disease themselves can nonetheless carry this variant around and infect others. So that is a discouraging prospect. At the same time, we have seen in the past week about a 25% increase in the daily rate of people going in and getting that first shot. So we have now reached the point where about 70% of the adult population, just the adults, just people over 18, have at least one shot, at least one dose. And that's a big step. That's where we hope to be a month ago. We're a month late, but at least we've gotten that far. And the scientists say we need to get to 80% in every part of the country before we could approximate herd immunity. And of course, many of our states are far, far below the average. Some of them are down around 50% and even lower.
So, I mean, concerning reading, Delta could be contagious as chickenpox. We know just how transmissible that is. Spreads more easily than the common cold, the 1918 flu that we've talked a lot about in comparison, and smallpox. And more risk of severe disease and hospitalisation. So that certainly means that vaccination. I mean, do you think this kind of information will encourage or even frighten more people to get vaccinated?
Slowly, it seems to be accomplishing that. Now, there is a very hard core of resistors, and conquering that will be a greater challenge. But in the meantime, that in the middle group, the people who have just sort of not gotten around to it, or who have thought maybe it would cost them money, or who had maybe a little lingering doubt about doing it, those people seem to be coming around and rolling up their sleeve. But it is still a concern to worry about whether it's 25, maybe 30% of the people in the country who are just going to dig in their heels and say no, particularly in the rural areas, and that can be in any part of the country, but particularly in the central parts of the country and in the Deep South.
Well, let's turn our attention to politics now. The bipartisan infrastructure bill. Tell us about the significance of this.
This is an enormous amount of money. It's $1 trillion over a period of years. More than half of that is brand new committed spending, over $500 billion. And it would go primarily for more traditional definitions of infrastructure, roads, bridges, highways, but also for internet improvements so that broadband would be more broadly shared across the entire culture. And essentially the idea is for everyone to have good broadband access in the country. There's also money here for cleaner water, for getting lead out of water, and a great number of other worthy projects. It is not nearly as ambitious as the original proposal, which had been twice as large and also really dedicated to tackling climate change. We don't have nearly as much of that kind of spending in this bill, and that's how we got to a bipartisan compromise in which something like 17 Republicans out of 50 were willing to go over with the 50 Democrats and provide a supermajority to go forward.
So is this still a win for the Democrats or a kind of more of a loss for the Democrats, given they were far more ambitious?
It can be read either way, but it is certainly a victory to get half a loaf and to come back later and try to get much of the rest of it in other ways, in other forms. If you can't do it with this kind of bipartisan compromise, perhaps you can do it in some of the budget process. And that's going to be a struggle here in the weeks ahead. The next week or two, the Senate is going to try to stay here in town and get a budget done and then move into a phase of the budgeting and spending process that we call reconciliation. At that point in the process, sometimes the door is a bit more open and you can do things just as the majority party if you can hold all of your people together. It gets a little tricky, a little procedural, but there's at least a chance there. That is how Obamacare, the medical program, got passed. It's also how Donald Trump was able to do some of his changes to the tax code. So there's a possibility there that much more could be done to make this a win-win for the Biden administration and the Democrats.
I would like your view on the emotional first Select Committee hearing on the Capitol attack, that attack in January the 6th, these insurrection hearings. What are some of the key points made there? It sounds like it has been incredibly emotional.
Yes, it has, because the police officers who were testifying were men whose lives were on the line, who were injured, who heard and saw the worst of what happened on January 6th. And there is, sadly, a rising tendency among some of the defenders of President Trump, some Republicans, who have said, you know, that thing that happened on January 6th, that's been exaggerated, and somehow they're trying to maintain that this was just a very small number of people who got out of hand and that the thousands of others involved were totally peaceful demonstrators or even tourists. Well, we can all see the videotape. We have, many of us, witnessed it personally. And that is a dumbing down of what happened. That is a bowdlerization of what happened. And clearly, these officers were telling the story as it happened, and it was emotional, as you say. Some of them were close to tears, and some of the members of the committee, when they watched the tape and listened to some of the testimony, were near tears as well.
Could the committee subpoena former President Donald Trump and other Republicans?
Yes, I think it's quite certain that they will subpoena some of the Republicans who talked to President Trump on that particular day and have made it clear that they heard things from him that this committee would very much like to have them talk about. Now, whether or not they would try to get the president himself is still up in the air. Some people think they should. Some people say they must. But he would probably resist. He does like to be the center of attention. But I think in this instance, it would be unwanted attention and he would resist. So then you go into court. You slow everything down. It lasts for months. And probably they would prefer to proceed if the president does not wish to be cooperative. The former president, I should say.
Thank you, Ron. Ron Alving, senior editor and correspondent, Washington Desk for NPR News.